Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I'm honored to share the microphone with really interesting entrepreneurs. These are people who are authors, they are speakers, they are business owners. They may be a virtual assistant or a web developer, but they're business owners. And they have bootstrapped their way into where they are now for the most part, and they have great stories to share. And, you know, they're really excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I'm excited. I am welcoming best-selling author Tony Robleski, I think that's right, to the show. His second book in the Mind Capture series went number one in three different business categories with Amazon.com and received stunning reviews from a wide range of leaders in marketing, sales, psychology, to academia, and multiple New York Times best-selling authors. And book number four, which is the one that I have in my hot little hand right now, is called Mind Capture, Leadership Lessons from 10 Trailblazers Who Beat the Odds and Influence Millions. It's a long title, but it has to be because it's very important. It tells you what the book's all about. Now, that book was released in May of 2015, and we're going to be discussing the principles in that book. Tony's work has been featured in various media outlets, ranging from Bottom Line Magazine, the Detroit Free Press, the Fox TV Network, ABC, CNN Radio, NPR, Entrepreneur Magazine Radio, and others. In addition, he has also served as a faculty member with both the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and CEO Space International. Tony, I am so excited to have you here.
Well, Denise, thank you. It's an honor. I finally get on the Mighty Denise show. This is going to be a lot of fun.
We were talking about in the green room because I was saying, you know, I've been wanting to ask you on for the longest kind of time, but I thought he is just too busy to come on my little show. And then, you know, the minute the universe always conspires to make you pay attention, right? So
true.
All of a sudden I had two or three people say, well, you need to get Tony on the show. I'm like, I know. So here you are, and I'm so glad that you're here.
Well, we're going to have a good time, and I've heard great things. And a lot of, like you said, a lot of my fellow people in the industry are like, Denise is awesome, so I'm going to put the pressure on you.
I'm going to have to send those $5 checks out today, I guess.
There you go.
Darn it, now I have to go buy postage. Well, listen, tell people a bit about yourself. I mean, you've got this great story, and the book is fascinating. So, but tell people, you know, very quickly what they need to know about you, something I might have missed in the intro.
Well, thank you, first of all. I think everyone listening, first off, is, you know, I believe that we're in a war of attention. And the whole name of the book series, my company, my brand, is called Mind Capture. And really what I mean by that, Denise, is, you know, how do you stand out and get attention in a world that's crowded and loaded with choice? And we're in a situation where people have digital ADD. You know, we have people listening all over the world right now live. Some are going to hear this later on at different points on podcasts, in their car, at the gym. So I'm always very grateful. I'll thank anyone right now, any moment in time hearing us, for their attention, the gift of attention, or what I call mind capture. So been on the road for about 11, 12 years, written several books on it. The latest book is really an expose which led on about leadership. But the war of attention just keeps getting more and more challenging. And to me, if you can't get attention, best product, service, idea, startup, nonprofit, board member you're trying to recruit, whatever you're trying to sell in the busy commerce space is going to have difficulty because you've got to win at the point of engagement. You've got to capture them. Then you got to hold their time, then you have to establish maximum credibility, then you've got to get over their BS meter, as I call it, and then from there, you might have a chance to continue on with your presentation or a chance to meet with someone. So I know I threw a lot there the first minute, but it is that important for people to understand that you've got to look at things very differently from the mindset, the marketing, and really your game plan across the board to get attention.
And long term, I find that a lot of people will just throw something out there. We seem to live in the shock and awe decade. I don't like it. I'll be honest with you. I don't like it at all. But I see a lot of people making what I consider to be really serious mistakes because I don't think they're understanding the consequences of their long-term message. I don't think they have a long-term plan. Am I wrong?
I agree.
Am I just missing
something? No. It's something that I struggle with is that, you know, as a marketing and sales guy, that was my blood and roots for many, many years. My first three books were on those topics is sometimes I'm like, man, I see marketing coming from a mile away, and I go, that's BS. And that's where I coined the term a decade ago, the BS meter. And all of us have it. If it looks like an ad, it smells like a sales pitch, it sounds too good to be true, we immediately put our radar up and say, hold on, that's BS. We lie
right.
to salespeople because we've also been lied to by lots of other salespeople that are unscrupulous. So I agree. The shock and awe is the world we live in, unfortunately, because you've got everyone that has social media. Everyone can be in their own channel, their own little network, microcast. So you're going to see more and more crazy stuff. And people do it also, Denise. You and I know this, but you know, from the angle of, hey, I got 3 million views on YouTube. Great. Did you build a sustainable business? Did you help somebody? Did you have a positive message? Or was it just some crazy idea you had with your cat that was flashing the pan for 36 hours and you disappeared? So it is a very strange world we live in.
I find it is. And to be honest with you, this is just me. I'm an old-fashioned girl. I live in the Deep South. When I'm faced with really distasteful marketing, I just leave. I don't even stick around to see what the message was. I turn on my heel literally and figuratively, and I just run. And I don't think I'm alone. I really don't.
No, I think there's a large amount of folks, and a lot of this is demographically. Our good friend Brad Zales would say this, you know, Gen X, I'm 43, baby boomers that are considered, I think, about 48, 49, up to about 65. You know, we're very skewed, boomers and Gen X, to kind of be much more skeptical, and it's kind of like, really, this is too much shock value to go, we can see right through it. And you look at the next waves, and again, you know, Brad Zales has been on your show many times, millennial generation expert. Not take away from Brad, but under 30 set looks at the world totally different. And their shock meter, you know, is very, very low. They're like, oh, yeah, it's just kind of YouTube or it's just Instagram or Snapchat. And, you know, me having teenage daughters, I can tell you that they're thinking very differently. They're brilliant. I love my daughters. But they look at communication and media so much more differently as far as what they'll tolerate versus those of us that skew a little bit older in age.
I'll tell you, I've reached the point with the media where I turn them off. I don't care who they are. I shut off
cable
a couple of years ago. You know, I refuse. I watch very little TV anyway. And, I mean, I just won't do it. And I've gotten to the point, too. There was a brilliant article by Joel Kalm. You know him, right, Joel Kalm?
Oh, yeah. Joel is amazing. I've interviewed him. Phenomenal.
And oh, I would love to interview him. I can't seem to reach him, but I'm going to one day, so I'm putting
him
on.
I will help you on the introduction, Kathy, or excuse me, Denise. I will make that introduction for you, so you are welcome.
Oh, thank you. But he wrote, and I think I saw that you shared this as well, this brilliant article on LinkedIn Pulse about why I'm unfollowing you on Facebook. And it's because we live in this world right now where everybody is so... they're just mad. People are mad. The news makes us mad. Our Facebook feeds make us mad. People are chronically offended, and I avoid those people like the plague. But there's something going on in our world right now that is really unsettling. And I'm wondering, this is a question for you, I'm wondering, is this bleeding over into how you market? I mean, are we supposed to reach out and soothe people? Are we supposed to reach out and keep on shocking the crap out of them? I mean, how do you cope? Because it's a very different world. The last 3 or 4 years have been, in a word, difficult. It's the only way I can describe it. Unsettling. So what do you do when things are changing so dramatically on social media and, you know, the way people think? I mean, how do you kind of, the old rules don't apply anymore, do they?
Well, I think it's an intricate question. I'll take my best stab at it. Is, you know, we're in this war of attention. And the challenge is how outrageous do you choose to play or not to play? And the media is now nothing more than just simply entertainment. Let's be candid. If you look at the splintering, you know, if we went from 1980, we had 4 television stations, to now 2015 as we tape this, you know, there's thousands and thousands of channels, not including Netflix or even Hulu. So you've got massive fragmentation. and all the media channels are doing their darndest and calling themselves 24-hour news or, you know, free information or you decide. All their taglines are very much, you know, cliches because they do have an agenda. And it's number one to shock you, to keep you there, to hopefully get a few precious eyeballs that they can hopefully go out and sell high-priced media to. Now, I'm not anti-television ad salespeople, billboard radio. I used to sell media for many years. My point is the war of attention splintered everything, and it's very much a, I would call it, drive-by society where we've seen it all, and it's like they have to keep escalating. And I'll give you a great example. What always fascinates me as a marketer is when we have these, and it's not a good fascination, it's kind of macabre, is we have these darn shootings. In the U.S., we can go on and on about them, but what they always do is they instantly talk about the gunman, he or she, and they focus on that. And typically within 7 to 15 days, you have copycats starting to show up or more, you know, increased activity of people wanting to replicate because they focus on the wrong thing.
I didn't know that.
Well, what you said something earlier, we get what we focus on. Absolutely. And I'm tired of the media. I'm just going to go on my own soapbox as a teacher of marketing. I call it on the right side of the force. Is why are we talking about this constantly? I'm not saying we ignore that people are getting killed. I'm not naive. But I think the media keeps focusing on these gunmen or these idiots, I call them, and gives them way too much credibility. And all of a sudden someone goes, hey, I'm kind of, you know, not feeling real good. I'll get some last-minute attention. I'll post on my Facebook page, and I'll get some coverage, and I'll just go out kind of, you know, death by cop. And the problem is, why are we not focusing on the heroes? Why are we not talking about the thousands of countless good stories that occur in every major city every day? You know, I think the focus is off, and that's why people are turning off. Let me repeat that. If the focus is off, people are starting to turn it off. And that's the beauty of choice. So if anything, I'm like you. I get very upset, Denise, when I see a lot of this crap. And a lot of times I tune it out. Sometimes I have to be familiar with the pulse. If I'm talking to a convention or group, I have to be aware of trends. So sometimes I have to listen to talk radio or listen to some of the major networks, NPR, just to be aware with clients what's the mood or the feel. But I have to really defend my mind. And my best advice to everyone listening is, if you're listening to a show like this, you're in select company. That's not arrogant. You're choosing to listen to this podcast, your show, Denise, because they see value in what you do. Okay, you're a media channel. And you're bringing in people that are much more positive in nature because like attracts like. And people are saying, look, I have an alternative. I can dial into a show like this. I can download it. I can listen to it on my drive or at the gym, in the airport. So there are all alternatives. There are lots of alternatives. And that's, I really think, the positive side of all this shock crap.
You know, I hadn't thought of that, you know, that I'm, you know, a media outlet. I hadn't even thought about that. So my little Edison light bulb, you know, the great big giant light bulb just went off. I'm standing here and it's shining over my head. So thank you for that. Occurred to me. You know, we get too close to things and we're just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have a radio show. It's fun. I get to meet new people. But that did not occur to me. So I'm going to have to do some thinking. But look, I'm
good
with
job.
You on, I will. I'll be thinking this weekend. So here's the thing. There's an awful lot of things that are going on, good, bad, indifferent. And you know, I love that you're talking about narrowing it down, narrowing your focus, and expanding your focus when necessary, but only allowing in what is going to be good and healthy for you. And I think if more people make that conscious choice, we would just be healthier as a nation. I really do think that.
Yeah, well, and we've got the upcoming election, you know, this year, it's already started, and 16 will intensify. And I always joke around not to get people in upset on Facebook, but I say, hey, watch what you're paying attention to. Because a lot of the ads and the messaging, it increases to get you, in, you know, really intense. I call it the pitchfork with nowhere to go syndrome. In all the major networks, all the political parties do this. In essence, what they do is they get you all talking in big picture ideas, and they try to play the populist theme of, you know, the government's the man, we should be mad at the big companies. There's always the hero and the villain, as Joseph Campbell would say. And the villain is what the politicians in office or the ones trying to win office are trying to get you fired up to think about. And what people don't realize is, okay, you get all mad and go to political rallies, but what are you doing in leagues? Where is the real engagement on the front line at the local level, the regional, the state, and the national? So I don't agree with people that say just disengage. No, you have to be aware. But people let it consume them. I'll go back to something you said a minute ago about Facebook and social media. I look at my news feed on Facebook as a reflection of who I want to have images and thoughts put in front of me. And if I'm seeing some trends where I'm getting upset, there are some unfriending or blocking going on. I'm like, wait a minute, you obviously attracted some of this. And some people change, but I've noticed there's only a select few of people that have political posts on their pages a lot, and they're getting really close to being deleted or basically blocked. And
right.
That's me changing. We can control the intake. And, you know, it's called social media. It's not real-world media. I don't put my losses on Facebook. If I lose a big deal, I don't go, oh, my gosh, I lost this big convention today. Or, you know, I didn't get a book deal. I don't go on there and wallow on none of all my tragedy. Here's what I'm going to throw out as a radical idea of mind capture power. Become a merchant of hope. Become an opportunist. It doesn't mean you're selling snake oil. Let me dive a little deeper for your global audience. People are looking for good news. They are attracted to optimistic people that are merchants of hope, not snake oil salesmen or women, but those that are positive. I can land in a city next week. I got 5 speaking dates next week. I do 3 in Michigan and 2 of them in Florida. And I can almost guarantee without a doubt, someone will walk up to me and say, hey, I've been following you on Facebook, telling you your mind capture page or your personal page. I love your daily mind nuggets. They're really positive. Keep them up. And I'm like, wow, I have people that like remember these. And sometimes I don't remember. I post a lot each day. I, you know, spend all day on social media, but I have multiple pages that I monitor and we post up and we link and we share information. But people are telling me, we love that stuff. They're all going
right.
to come, hey, I really needed to hear that today. And it's
right.
like, okay, I will directly go the counter opposite, because here's the deal. I think being negative, snarky, sarcastic is a simple cop-out. It's built on fear and laziness. And it's real easy to go down, oh, that's because they're successful. Go, oh, he's got a book deal. Oh, he does all the speaking. Now he or she's got it made. No, don't tell you about the 10-year overnight sensation, you know, that maybe has gone through a divorce, multiple business partners, you know, been shot down hundreds of times, that never quit, that did gigs with 5 people in the audience. They don't want to look at that. Well, it's just that. Because it's being a very, very simple default for people to do that. And social media, that's why you monitor the intake, my friends. If you sense your Facebook feed's getting too snarky, Twitter is another area to watch out for that is very gossip-centric. You don't have much time. So people try to really shock you with 140 characters, and I'm just starting to use it. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't really want to get drawn into all this, you know, short duration of burst because it impacts my attention units and my productivity if I don't watch it. So.
And see, that makes sense. I mean, I have gotten to the point where, and there's one or two people that I know very, very well, and you know, I've followed them for a long time, but this is kind of in the opposite direction, and I wanted to ask you about this. They're very proud of what they've accomplished, and they should be. There's two people in particular. And
uh-huh.
I admire the work they've done. I admire how they got from, you know, basically being bankrupt to where they are right now. But now it's just over the top. Look at me, look at me, look at me. And I'm getting, frankly, sick of it.
Oh, Denise,
so, you
nailed something.
What do you do about that? You know, it's just,
well,
I unfollowed one of them yesterday.
Yeah, it's the fine art of self-promotion versus being a shameless promotion person. And I think that we all have to be thinking about the fact that we're all in sales now. This is something that I train in every keynote or workshop I give anywhere in the world or even live webinars is simply this. I've seen, when I do Chamber of Commerce talks from city to city, Denise, I might have 200 people in a room, and I've got 50 different businesses, nowhere even related to each other. I have nonprofit directors, I have ministers, I have lawyers, doctors, the profession. And I'll poll them at the end and say, what brought you here? And I see the professionals, the doctors, lawyers, and CPAs coming up to me privately, almost like tail between their legs saying, hey, we got to sell. We're not like you, Tony. We're not professional sales people, but I have to bring in business. I have to get word-of-mouth marketing. I have to bring in rain. I said, frankly, time out. Number one, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. Two, you're telling me you have to sell and you don't know what to do or you don't want to sell. And they're like, oh, yes, I don't want to be a salesperson. I have strange news, and I often will tell live audiences, get over the fact that selling is not bad. It is done everywhere, in every sector, every corner, from nonprofit work to startups to board of director meetings to for-profit entities. It's done heavily in religion. I mean, I'm going to say something really radical here, not to be shock value, but it's my strong opinion, Denise. You look at a lot of your most famous people throughout history. they were phenomenal salespeople. If the message still lives on long after they died.
Oh, Zig was phenomenal. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, I just put one of his quotes up. But let's look at, you know, mainstream. Oh, Zig was a legend. Let's look at some mainstream historical people that if you pull through, they go, okay, I know who Gandhi is. I know who Mother Teresa is. I know who MLK is. And I'm not ever shooting these people down. Their message influenced millions, so something there is positive and it's stuck. That's hard to do. But let's be very direct. Mother Teresa, her publicity efforts, helping people, lepers in India, and all the different countries she was in, that generated millions of dollars in not only publicity, but fundraising. That's called selling. And some people go, oh, you're trying to pick on the Catholic Church. No, I'm not. I'm just saying if you strip it down, if you read any Robert Cialdini influence books, if you read any Jay Abraham who I've interviewed, if you read any of my work or Dan Kennedy, a lot of the masters that I've studied with, they'll tell you, you're going to have to go out and sell it. And a lot of these people, when you meet them privately, they're introverts. They get off the stage and they hide out for weeks on end. They don't want to sometimes be up on stage. They're recluses, but then they know they have to promote their book. They have to give a big event. They got to get out there and really stretch and get uncomfortable and play in that gray of promoting, even though deep down they're like, yep, I don't really like to, but I have to. Let me give you the best example I've ever seen. Hollywood celebrities. If you've ever noticed, let's say there's a new Tom Cruise movie that comes out next month. Literally 30 days before that movie comes out, and Tom Cruise has a built-in audience whether you like him as an actor or not, but every late-night television show, a lot of your major networks like NPR, CNN Radio, Tom Cruise will go on a media tour. And you're thinking, why does he have to do it? Don't be fooled. The studios know there's intense competition for that first 7 days in the theater, the opening week or weekend. They put in those contracts the major stars have to do, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, CNN, Anderson Cooper, NPR, you know, Fresh Air with Diane Reem. They've got to go on the networks because they have to sell it. Now, they can hit 5 to 10 million viewers or 500,000 listeners in 30 minutes on NPR, for example, and they have to do it because it's crowded. It goes back to the fact that it's noisy. Even celebrities, they may say, oh, I'm just doing press for the movie release. They're selling the movie. Let's just call it spade a spade, get on with it, and understand that even celebrities have to sell. So here's my point. If celebrities have to sell, what's your excuse?
Exactly. Oh. And listen, if you want to see a natural-born salesman in action, watch any two-year-old. They are going to get what they want every stinking day, right? But somewhere
along
the line,
that's the world.
They rock it. I mean, I stand back and just watch and go, ooh, Mom, you're in trouble, because that kid is going to get what he or she wants. But somewhere along the line, that's kind of either snarked out of us or smacked out of us. And, you know, we're taught to learn that sales is a bad term. Look, years ago, I've never forgotten this. Years ago, I had someone come up to me. I owned a jewelry store, and he said, you know, I've got to tell you, completely just out of left field, you are one of the best natural sales people I've ever met, and I wanted to run over him with a car. I was so insulted.
Wow.
And I was like, what? Well, my hands went on my hip. I did the whole Southern woman. What?
Yeah.
It turns out he was right, because if I'm passionate about something and I'm interested and I'm engaged, I can sell it to you if I believe what I'm telling you. If I don't believe what I'm telling you, I'm not going to even try.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Well, and the children, I mentioned the best salespeople in the world are kids, and I give
right.
Very specific examples. And I've had senior salespeople, men, male and female, look at me and go, boy, I've been selling longer than you, but you're pretty right about that. Those kids are good. So you nailed it.
They're good. I mean, they don't know, because they just, I think it's innate in us. I mean, think about it. We're selling when we get up and get dressed. We go into our closet. You know, we're garbing ourselves for the day. We're selling when we arrange our hair, put on makeup, tie our tie. We're selling. We're selling when we go in, you know, for a resume, you know, to go in for a job interview. We're selling every day. I mean, you may be
exactly.
Selling to a cat. When you go into a shelter and you see the cat or the dog you want, you have to sell yourself to that animal. It's instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
We do it all the time, and I think people don't recognize that.
Well, exactly. And I mean, you've brought on many of the top, you know, sales, marketing, academic minds with your show.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll never admit, but they're out trying to promote what they do. Promotion is called selling. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I'd love to have people just magically show up and order hundreds of books per day, line up in my shopping cart, call me, have my voicemail box jammed, but there has to be an awareness outbound push for marketing. And it's something that a lot of the internet marketers, like, oh, you can just build traffic, you don't have to go out and promote. No, that to me is kind of a lie. You should be doing both. And again, that's a topic for another conversation or maybe a different guest, but, you know, promotion is constantly going on. If you look at, for example, Pepsi and Coke, they continue to assault your mind with thousands of messages per year just from those two companies, because they know if you have a tendency, if you forget, you might buy Pepsi one day, and then all of a sudden they lose you. That results in a 0.01 market shift, which is hundreds of millions of dollars. So the big boys and girls that have the big ad budgets, they're continually just trying to, what I do, what I call remind market, trying to remind you they're still here, and just those few extra impressions, while not trackable, do seem to have some component where they're like, you think of them more. That's why you see them in the background of a ball game on television. You show up at a run, they're all over the banners, they're at the podium, they got their logo. They're just trying to remind you that, hey, we're around. And again, marketing, well, it was 5,000 to 6,000 messages per day, Denise, just in North America.
Oh, I know.
If you look at the psychological numbers, it gets more kind of scary. In our own head, we have about 50,000 to 60,000 self-talk conversations. So if you're listening to, you know, this interview, I hope you're still with us. Some of you might be thinking about your bills you got to pay, the soccer game, church on Sunday, the synagogue. You might be all over the place. I might go, snap, come back to us. Come back to the interview. Because that inner voice, and again, hopefully it's the same voice you're hearing. Because if it's a different voice, we can't help you. But
are you
just
sure? Because I hear voices every now and then.
Well, yeah,
everybody?
But I just, you know, yeah, you know, and it's the inner chatter, the grasshopper mind, as they say in the Asian culture.
Oh, yeah.
And you just, that's why I live in North Idaho. People ask me, why do you live in Michigan and North Idaho? Well, I'm moving here full-time in a couple of years. But North Idaho, I can literally look out my window right now, and there's like the sound of music. I take a walk at lunchtime. This is not to boast. I'm just giving some key mind capture thought process here. I can take off at lunchtime, go hike a mountain for an hour, come back totally recharged, retuned in. There's no one to bug me. My phone doesn't work on the mountain. And come back and I reset and I go, all right, let's focus again. And I think
right.
that with all this intense overload in our own brain, the media around us, our cell phones on constant, you know, 24/7 alert, I'm going to encourage people to really step back and go, all right, what am I putting into my mind? And then when I'm trying to convey my message, how am I doing it? How am I trying to
mm-hmm.
persuade effectively? So.
Well, and you have to look at that. Again, this goes back to what we were talking about at the top of the show. You have to have kind of a long-term plan. I mean, if you're going to just go out and strip naked, paint yourself purple, and get in a bathtub with green Jell-O, I don't consider that a long-term plan.
No.
But apparently some people do. But... And then, Tony, I wanted to ask you, too, because part of marketing, part of sales, is actually engaging with other people, and that's something relatively new in the past 10 years. We didn't used to have to actually talk to people or engage with them or comment or tag them on, you know, Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. Now it's very important that we actually are engaging, and I would love for you to cover that if you don't mind.
Well, it's a good question. I think it comes down to the biggest gift. Again, in my expert opinion here, I'm looking at how you attract and capture and hold attention is the gift of attention. And with all this noise, online and offline, all the message counts, which I just outlined in our own head and what the media throws at us in this consumer-centric world, is if you really sit and listen to someone, they're overwhelmed, and they're going to say, oh, my gosh, you're listening for half an hour, I love you, but they're going to behave with a whole new level of respect. Because here's the deal. Everybody wants to be heard. If you look at a lot of the danger of social media, the crap, the trolls, the dirtbags that are on there, you know, a lot of them are unhappy because they don't get any attention. And they feel like they're not being heard, so they escalate and they intensify. And they beat their chest louder, and they get more graphic, and they get more mean, more shiny. The whole goal is they're not being heard. It doesn't mean that, you know, we have to sit and make an audience for everybody, but we need some healthy outlets for people to say, you know what, where can I go learn about how to communicate better? Where can I volunteer at to understand it's not all about me? And the challenge is with everyone having their own sort of media channel now is the gift of attention is getting hard because it's a fine line. I promote a lot of other authors, Denise. You've been following me for a year or two. You've heard about me.
I know.
I'm constantly interviewing. The whole new book, you know, that I sent you is about some of my best interviews. And the thing I constantly hear when we hang the phone up and we stop recording is these famous people in their own respective worlds and industries say, look, that was a lot of fun. Let's do it again. And if you literally sat down and timed out how much time I actually talk in an hour interview, it might be a few minutes. Similar like what we're doing now, I just listen. Because I'm taking notes. I'm learning. It's not all about me. And what's weird is this type of interview, I get to talk a whole lot more. I'm used to being on your side of the microphone. it's a dual sort of mentorship. I love to ask great questions, shut up, and just listen. Now, conversely, not to be hypocritical, my other dual-sided coin here, I get in front of groups of 1,500 people, and I talk with them and share and teach for an hour or two, which is a whole different skill set, a different level of persuasion, and it requires me to flip in between left and right brain and really rethink how I communicate holistically. So I'm disturbed, and I mean that in a good way, but I love to keep learning and growing. But at the same time, I also love with enthusiasm and passion to go out and teach it and share it and move it on. And I had other authors say, man, why do you always promote everybody else? So like, here's the deal. I love your stuff. Number two, I want people to be exposed to all sorts of trailblazers and thought leaders and other great content. And I don't have the best claim on all knowledge. That's arrogant. So I'll weave in some of my stuff. Absolutely. I believe in it. I write about it. I teach it all over the world. And I think it's of value. But if I'm overkilling on it, people are going to go like, it's all about him. And like you said a few minutes ago, Denise, you just unfriended or stopped following someone.
I couldn't take it. I couldn't take anymore. Yeah. And I'm sure he's not aware he's doing it. He is very proud of what he's accomplished. But now it just gives me a sore spot at the back of my neck. It bothers me.
Yep. And on the flip side, let's go positive. There are countless great, you know, salt of the earth entrepreneurs and authors that have great books, phenomenal messages, but they don't have the confidence or more so the training on top of the confidence to go out and effectively promote. Give an example. I go to a writer's event in 2 weeks over in Seattle. A friend of mine does a big book publishing institute. He said, tell me when you talk about speaking and how do you promote. And what I'm going to tell a lot of these writers, this is the short version of my talk, and remarks is this. Okay, great. Welcome to being an author. Your book is done. Let me just say this, not to scare you. Congratulations. Pat yourself on the back. 5% of your work is done. The next 2 years, the 95% of the work comes is called promoting. I don't want you to have a garage full of books, an entire basement of your home filled with boxes of unsold books. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to now go on the road, go on the radio, talk to the Rotary, talk to the Boys and Girls Club. You are now out to promote your message to the world, and you're going to have to get out there. They will not show up. You're going to have to sometimes do radio interviews at 3 in the morning because of time change. You might have to do a talk in front of 3 people. But you're going to have to now do the heavy lifting of promoting that wonderful message from the brain to the page. That's not easy. But from the page to a buy or a download button link is a much different equation. So that's a short version of it. And again, if you frame it properly, like we're doing today, you know, and people hopefully are getting a few value points, is selling is a noble profession. Those that make the most in selling typically are providing the most value. That is a known equation. So someone's making millions of dollars, typically they're helping millions of people, or they're doing a high-level transaction that gives a high-level commission or compensation. It's the law of, you know, diminishing returns, or the law of, you know, the golden rule, I call it. This stuff is demonized because one or two idiots get caught, and then they put everybody into that bad bushel of apples. And there might be 100 good apples in there and one bad apple, and it says, oh, you're in the banking industry like they did years ago. All bankers are bad. No, they're not. A few people got away with some things they shouldn't have. Now, all of a sudden, for many years, we had a bad BS meter towards bankers. Today, if I speak to lots of banking groups, full disclosure, I'm not their paid pitch man, but I know all sorts of bankers that help build communities, that help loan money to startups, that hire people, that create all sorts of spinoff work. Let's talk about that instead of the idiot banker in town that embezzled 50 grand. I don't want to hear about that. So.
Yeah, I don't understand this, what seems to be a widespread animosity towards corporations or banks. Now, I do get the widespread animosity towards politicians. I share it. And I don't care who they are. I dislike all of them. But the truth is, I don't understand how that, is it just mass hysteria? What is going on with that? Somebody's marketing the heck out of hatred. That's all I can say.
Well, you know, J. Abraham, when I interviewed the new book, you know, and if people are interested, I'm going to throw a quick plug out there because, hey, I think the book is good. It's mindcapturedbook.com. Go to mindcapturedbook.com. But J. Abraham was one of the guests we had in the book. And Jay had a great quote from many years ago. He said, it's better to be loved or hated than tolerated. Now, when I first read that 20, 30 years ago as a young marketing buck, you know, new to the game, I thought, what a dink. I'm highly offended by that. You know, as an idealistic 22-year-old, you know, who's this arrogant old man called the marketing wizard? It sounds kind of like he thinks he knows it all. But as I dug deeper into it, I got more life experience down the road of working in different companies, mid-sized, large, being now self-employed 11 years, there's a lot of relevancy to what he said. Let's deconstruct. It's better to be loved or hated than tolerated. When you're out doing a lot of good things, you're going to have a lot of what they call haters, people that disagree. And many times, it's those closest to us. I get a lot of them in the book about this. Along the way, all these trailblazers or high-level leaders from all walks of life, they have all these commonalities, but one is they lose close people along the way. Not because they're mean, because they're evil, they're greedy, they change. You know, I've had many people the last 11 years of my entrepreneurial journey that I don't associate with, I don't hang out with anymore. I'll be candid, I went through a divorce, and I don't think I'm out of turn to mention this. It wasn't because my former wife was bad and I was bad, we changed. Many things in our world changed that I kept growing and growing. Many authors and speakers that told me, point blank, you realize if you go out and speak and go on the road as a writer, you're going to probably end up divorced. I said, well, I hope not.
Really?
Unfortunately. Yeah.
That's the first time I've heard that.
I've had a few
mentors. And I speak with a lot of authors
time.
And speakers. That's new to me.
Well, it's, you know, sort of the elephant in the room that everyone wants to keep hidden. And I don't mean that all the speakers and authors out there are going to get divorced or encourage it. Here's what I think my mentors try to tell me. You will continue to outgrow unless you have some commonality with your spouse. And I'll be very candid. I had a lot of things that were my fault. It's not for me to bear my dirty laundry for shock value. There's a teachable moments here. In the moments of tragedy, how do we turn them into triumph? And my point is, what Jay was saying, you're going to outgrow people. They're going to want to have good intentions. Those good intentions are maybe going to keep you stuck where you're at. If you start to question, you start to get more upbeat, you start to want to grow and expand, that disruption of the social circles you're in, those apple cards, people don't like it. And unfortunately, many times it's your closest friends and family. And they'll never see you the same. I've had a couple siblings that look at my books like, what imposter wrote this? This can't be you. And they kind of joke about it, and I can read
right.
these lines. I love my siblings, but they know me for all my warts and all the stupid stuff I did as a kid. They just can't see me evolving, not because I'm better. I love them all, unconditionally. But they just think, oh, just tell me. Yeah, you don't want to speak it again. Oh, yeah, you spoke to 1,000 people. Yeah, you know, someone paid them. You know? And it's having that thick skin that many trailblazers I found, and this is commonality of the book that all of us have, Denise. The things I reveal in the book, these 7 key characteristics, we all share them. These people are maybe a little more famous. They have a bigger audience, more followers. They're on television. Maybe they're famous in some circles. They're no different than you or I. And I think we hold ourselves so short in many capacities. I've done it myself, where we don't think we're that good, or I could never be like them, or, you know what, I'm not as, you know, a promoter like they are, or they had a lucky break. And what you'll find is they've been turned down for years. Then the lucky break came in 13 years later. I just never quit.
It's imposter syndrome. Now, you're talking, let me back up just a bit. You're talking about the 7 key characteristics that trailblazers have in common. And I'm going to read them because I'm telling you right now, I'm reading these and going, yep. Number 1, intense curiosity. Number 2, persistence. Number 3, vision. I do struggle a bit with that. We're talking about, you know, consequences down the road. Number 4, lifelong learners. Absolutely. Number 5, problem solvers. Number 6, focus on their strengths. Number 7, like you said, thick skin. You know, Larry Wingate has been a guest multiple times, and one of the things that he told me on one of our very early interviews with how he got his start, you know, because he was basically very well off. He worked in the telecom industry, and then when AT&T divested, I know you know the story, he went from being a millionaire to mowing his neighbor's lawns pretty much overnight. And somehow in the conversation, he said that what got him started was a book that he read, and I don't know who wrote it, I should, but basically I think the title was What You Think of Me Is Really None of My Business. And I was like, oh, Larry, that's me, because I'll be honest with you, Tony, I don't care what other people think of me. It's because you know why? I'm not thinking their thoughts. I'm not in charge of their thoughts. All I can do is put my best foot forward, and you either like it or you don't. I really don't care.
Yeah. Well, and
people
Larry
are like,
Larry
really?
Is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Larry is wonderful, and I in your philosophy, you know, that's very trailblazer-ish, I would say, or trailblazer-like is a better term. And the thing
yeah,
is,
I've been called a lot of things. Trailblazer's not one of them.
Well, here's the thing: it hits on basically, really 2 points out of the 7. Persistence. You keep pressing on in spite of the fact that there's people that aren't just rolling out the applause for you, as Larry had discovered, and I've just discovered in my career. And number 7, you have to have thick skin. Where I try to balance out is if they're paying clients and people that are a good fit for my message, if I keep hearing feedback that is, you know, hey, you know, you might want to look at changing this, or hey, there's a problem there. If I hear it over and over, I will definitely look at that and listen to it. And I think that it's a balancing act. A lot of mavericks will say, I do my own thing, my way or the highway. No, wait a minute. If you're a publicly owned company, you're a CEO, you have to listen to your board of directors. You have different people that you have to get wise counsel from. You just can't be the lone ranger. Let's look at Donald Trump. Love or hate the guy, he has probably a good team around him that probably, you know, goes, oh, no, Donald, why'd you do that? But he's like, all right, I got a team that can help me out. So he is getting wise counsel, whether you like the man or not. He still is Donald. He still speaks his mind, but he also privately gets advice. He gets advisors that tell him, hey, you might want to think about this, you might want to think about that, or probably his PR handlers about, hey, how are we going to figure this out? You know,
right.
How are we going to solve what you said? How are we going to respond? Because he's so loose cannon-ish, but, you know, he's got a company that's got thousands of employees. You can't do that all as a lone ranger. So there's the biggest myth. If someone's that much of a maverick, how do they get people to work for them? If they're rolling over people that much, the people wouldn't stay, and they'd never be able to build a long-term sustainable company. So there's the public Donald, and there's the private Donald. You never met the man. I've read his books, but he's got to be doing something right, whether you like him or not, because people buy his product. So
well, I've read his books, and I'll tell
you,
if you don't know anything about Donald Trump right now, read his books. They will open your eyes. They will. Like you said, the business person is a very different persona than, you know, the blustering Donald out in public. You know, I look at some of the things he says, and I'm like, what? You might want to back that one up a bit. But honestly, look at what he's done. Yeah, I don't really care what he says. More, I want to see what he's done. I watch people rather than listen to them.
Yeah. Well,
that's
you go back to what you went back and listed the characteristics of Trailblazer. You know, if anything, these are reminders. There's things like you said about it, you know, 20 minutes ago, Denise, you know, as kids, we're really good and we have this curiosity, we're great salespeople, we forget or it's beaten out of us. These things are designed to remind everyone that when they go through it, you know, chapter by chapter, or they get some of the key components, is that we forget. And not only that, I like to draw from people that are going through a tough challenge because it can save me potential heartache and time, or I can share that wisdom and knowledge and teach it to other people that I'm trying to help or influence. So you look at these 7, not everyone can do all of them every day, but there's certain ones that they kept overlapping. I'm like, man, they do that exhibit part for number 2. They do number 3. And you go back to vision. We all struggle with number 3 because there's so much distraction. Very few people wake up when they're a little kid and say, I'm going to be this. It's going to happen by the time I'm 40. There are different diversions, there's different businesses we get in and out of, there's different heartbreaks, there's different wins, there's different joys, different pain. And that vision can get muddy for a while, and then it can get brighter again. I know, you know, before the book came out, 2-3 years in front of it, I was going through divorce, post-divorce as well. And for a while, I almost thought about walking out of the speaking business and the writing business. I was just burned out. I'm like, what do I want to do now? I had to rethink my vision, reset some goals, because the original blueprints were totally, I'm going to imagine, crinkled up like a paper and thrown in the wastebasket. And I had to go, what do you do now? You're out telling everybody goal setting and, you know, rah-rah and motivate, and you can do it. Your life's a shambles. It's a mess. I remember doing a keynote in L.A. back in February of 2011. I was still about 3 months in the middle of my divorce. My wife had moved out 2 months in front. And I had to go on. I was backstage and introduced. And there's about 500 people. And I thought, I'm the biggest fraud right now. I have to go tell these people how to run their chambers of commerce, to be the leader in their community. And my own house is burning like Rome. And I got on stage, Denise, and time disappeared. I was at my passion, my joy, and at that hour and a half was an escape to my genius. And when I got off the stage, that two-ton truck came right back on my mind and my chest and said, going through a divorce, and all the fear voices started to come back. But I had to work through that. And I'm not the only speaker, teacher, author, or trailblazer, or leader that's ever had to go on the stage when everything's burning down behind it and act like, hey, it's okay. I got to put my game face on. I have to lead from the front and know that, hey, I'm human. The other thing with all these people in this book, they have faced massive adversity. You know, I call that tragedy into triumph. And even the ones that you consider that I interview that are very successful financially or media-wise, they still have problems every day. Their problems have more complexity, sometimes more people, and more zeros financially. They're not patron saints of perfection. And they're human. And that's the element. I'm not afraid to interview anyone and ask them good questions to tell me about the humanity. What you shared humanity, my friend, that I can bring back and teach and replicate and go around the world and disseminate. That's what I'm interested in.
And you have, I'm looking at the list of people that you have interviewed, Seth Godin, John Stossel, Jeffrey Gittimer. Is that how you say his name, Gittimer?
You got it.
Jay Abraham, Sally Hogshead. Of course, she's, the whole Fascinate thing. Brian Tracy, Bengay III, and, of course, our friend Brad Zolas. I mean, you have interviewed some fascinating people on here. Is there any one thing? I mean, I know there's a list of different traits, but is there any one thing that stood out with you with all of these people, just one particular trait that they all shared above anything else?
Easily number four. The fourth of the seven traits is they're lifelong learners. Now, again, some of these folks are very tilted towards that direction because they're in personal development. Brian Tracy, very much about lifelong learning. He is a product of his teaching, okay? Jay Abraham, the marketing wizard, charges $5,000 per hour, folks, to teach marketing.
I know.
And usually have to fly to L.A. to meet him. So when I interviewed him for about 40 minutes, I thought, man, I just saved like $4,000. I'm helping to promote him, so he didn't charge me. But the bigger point is the lifelong learning has to be there. It doesn't mean these people sit down for 3 hours a day and, read newspapers, go online and get media, watch TED Talks, listen to 3 hours of podcasts. They're very good at aggregating out what's relevant and also staying on top of trends. As Les Brown taught me, I've had the pleasure to share the stage with one of my heroes, Les Brown. He says, you got to be hungry. You got to be hungry. And these top trailblazers, they're still out there hustling. They're writing books. They're hitting the road. They're doing aggressive schedules. They live a pace that most mere mortals 20 years younger can't even keep up or comprehend on how they pull it off. So I get inspired listening to them because they haven't settled. And I'll give you an example. John Stossel, the guy used to have an audience of like 40 million people a week on 2020. As a kid, I remember watching him and Barbara Walters go at it. I'm like, man, this guy's a legend. He's like interviewed the best. He's like, the Mike Wallace of ABC. He jumped over to Fox because his viewpoint the last 20 years shifted from liberal to libertarian politically. And all of a sudden he became ostracized basically at ABC. He asked Fox to join their network. So now he's on Fox with his show Stossel, about 10 million viewers a week. Folks, that's a big audience. So when I get a chance to interview someone like that, it's kind of weird. I'm like, wait a minute, this guy's been asking the top people in the world questions. I'm asking him questions? Who the hell is Tony? But it's reselling myself on the fact that, hey, John's human. John's got a mortgage. John's got maybe an ex-wife. John's got opportunity. John's got producers. He's got a book. He's got a book publisher. How do I get into his world to learn from what he's doing? How does John stay motivated? What keeps him on the road, asking the tough questions? The whole commonality is they think like a child would. They're curious. They're looking at things not to be a pessimist, but how do we improve it? What's coming out here in a couple of weeks, it's instructive, is in the movie Steve Jobs. I read the book by Walter Isaacson. It's pretty big, about his biography, Love or Hate the Man. I'm interested to see the visual movie of his life. But Jobs was constantly learning. And his set of unique talent, from calligraphy to design, you know, to IT, you fuse it, it's that lifelong learning kind of mixed up that became Apple. And all the innovative, trailblazing products is because he kept learning new skill sets. Then he would fuse them together and keep asking better and better questions. And I mention that movie because it's supposed to be much more for portrayal of his humanity, of the shortcomings he had, because most of your geniuses have a lot of crazy tendencies. That's what also makes them wildly successful.
Well, I find that people like that tend to be introverted. Has that been your experience? And I mean seriously introverted, like me. I mean, if you would have asked me 6 months ago, I would tell you I'm so introverted that I'm about half an inch away from being a hermit. Well, I'm closing that gap. I'm about a quarter inch now.
I'm going to back you up on this. You're going to be shocked. You're going to be shocked at me.
Am I wrong?
I'm not edifying you because you're interviewing me. We just met, you know, via introduction a couple weeks ago, and we talked a little bit before the show today via phone. But my central mentor is a man by the name of Dan Kennedy. I'm interviewing him in a couple of weeks. When we re-release this book, if we come up with version 2 of, you know, Mind Capture Trailblazers, Dan will be included. It's taken me a long time to get an interview with him because he's picky. Dan is arguably one of the top direct response copywriters and marketers in the world. I mean, he's worked for Joan Rivers.
I've got several of his books. Yep.
Yeah, he's worked. I mean, his resume is just staggering. Like Joan Rivers, he's done infomercials, Tony Robbins. He's worked with Jay Abraham. I could go on and on and name drop. But the point is, he's like the Picasso of our industry. Now, Dan will tell you in his writing, and I've been to his home. So this is not made up, folks. It's not name dropping just to say, oh, I kind of hang out with him. Dan is very much a hermit. He is not the most social person. He'll even joke with you about that in his own books. He preferred to be working in his cave, in his home office, which I've been in, writing copy, doing phone work. He does not like to be on stage. But he had to push himself through it for many years as a professional speaker in NSA for 25 years plus to get real uncomfortable to do that, to build his business. He's a huge introvert, okay? I know countless other entrepreneurs that their stage persona is different than their private life. My own confession here, I've never revealed this, but I'll throw it out there now. I love North Idaho, as I mentioned a little while ago, because it's peaceful. It's a breakaway of when I'm not in the big cities traveling and teaching. I get out here to do mind clearing. I walk the mountain. We mentioned Brad Zales. Brad spoke here in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, last summer. I said, stay a couple extra days, trust me. I took him up on what's called Tubbs Hill, and he goes, man, I see where you get your ideas, where you decompress. I said, this mountain. I walk these hills, not like I'm the mountain whisperer. I'm kind of like, you know, a nomad with a beard. I just hang out and eat granola all day on the hill. I work, but my point is that mind clearing, getting away from that intense speed, I'm different at 43 than I was at 33. I used to run hard. I've got to take on the world, be bestseller. I'm going to go on Oprah and do this and this and this and this. It's kind of an arrogant idiot with too much ego and not enough compassion. But I think the great humbling the last few years, Denise, and this is relevant for your audience, my divorce had me reset and look at my entire blueprint of life and go, where do you want to go? You've just crumpled up your original set of goals. You're going to start over. You got a blank slate. Where do you want to go? How do you want to map out and visualize this life? And it's exciting and terrifying, all in the same sentence. Where do you want to take it? And I've become, frankly, much more mellow. When I'm not speaking and teaching or doing webinars or interviews like this, I'm pretty much a homebody. My girlfriend, we could go out and meet other business owners. She owns a company here. She's very successful. Many times, like, what does your boyfriend do? I won't even say much. Not because I'm not trying to be social. I'm just like, I just want to listen to people. I'm done trying to impress everyone all the time. I want to be able to listen to your story. And it becomes exhausting trying to always be tuned in and turned on and talking constantly. You know, it's ironic because doing an interview here, I'm talking the whole time primarily. But when I'm not doing this, I like my downtime. I like my chill time. I like to get away from the hustle and bustle, the noise. I go dark. Let me give you a strategy that I teach a lot of my top clients. Go dark occasionally. Make it a scheduled thing. Every day, half hour, hour. You have an hour of power at bedtime or at night, you know, maybe lunchtime or in the morning early. I get most of my writing done in correspondence at the crack of dawn. No one can find me, and I shut my phone off. You just can't find me. my girlfriend, my kids, my business partner, they get kicked. They're like, oh, Tony went dark. You will not find me. That's what voicemail is for, and the turn the phone back on button is for. I have to get certain things done, and I have to keep myself healthy to be able to give it back out. I have to be able to sustain it so I can give it.
And see, I think that's brilliant advice, and I do that all the time, even though I live alone and will forevermore.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to be the crazy lady on the porch with a shotgun and six cats. Seriously, that's my
there
goal in life. And I'll manage it. But I mean, even though I'm here alone all the time and, you know, I'm a high-functioning workaholic, I freely admit that, I will just shut it down. I will shut my monitors down. My cell phone is almost never where I am. Sometimes I find it in the refrigerator crisper drawer. It's not attached to me. I found it in a bag of cherries one day. I kid you not. I kept hearing this weird noise in the refrigerator. But, I mean, I will go outside. I have this wonderful dog. Her name is Abby Rose, and she's a Catahoula Leopard Cur. She was an hour away from being euthanized. I mean, and she's the sweetest dog you're ever going to want to meet, but she looks like a spotted pit bull. So they were going to kill her. So I've got her here, and honestly, she has a squirrel chasing time. She's got a little doggy wristwatch, and she will stand on my feet until we go outside and chase squirrels. And when I come back in, I am totally refreshed because I shut it down. Shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do that multiple times a day. I may be out there for 10 minutes. I may grab a shovel, and I may be out there for an hour. But when I come back, my brain is calm. Whatever it was bothering me. I've taken the time to turn it over to my subconscious for review, and I'm ready to rock and roll it again. And I think people don't know how really important that is. Just take that downtime wherever you can find it, daily.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, daily. Okay,
yep.
So we're talking about... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you 100%. Just make a little bit more time for yourself, and you don't
mm-hmm.
have to save the whole planet one day.
Are you sure? I figure I'll die at 100 years old in my bed, but I will be plotting world domination just before I go to sleep.
There you go.
I have plans, I'm telling you. Okay, so I wanted to ask you very quickly, because we're talking about strategies, that how do you find the time to do everything that you want to get done? That's a big problem with me. I never feel like I've got enough hours. I've got that little squirrel brain thing going on. So how do you manage time? Do you have any advice?
You know, it's a complex topic, and I'll give a couple things that I do that may be of value, that may resonate, and some might say I totally disagree. So here we go. We're all given that same 24-hour window. What I find is there's the top two or three things that I have to get done each day. And I'll be candid, I might get two of the three done. One might carry over the next day. I don't have this complex online Google calendar and printed calendar, and I hold myself accountable each hour. I just don't. And here's why. I travel a lot. I have four kids. You know, I have a very rich and dynamic, eclectic lifestyle. I'm always moving around. I live out of two bags. I'm like a nomad. And my situation, it's like I get dropped in different cities. I work out of that laptop in those two bags or hotel rooms. But there's certain core things that get done every day. My reading, my daily writing, my social media updating. I've got different deadlines for a weekly e-letter. I do daily posting. I do a monthly newsletter, I interview people, I have coaching clients, I do webinars. So that content creation is a daily habit. Is getting one habit down, then adding another habit. The other thing is I'm very strict that at least four or five times a week I work out. And it could be a three-mile hike. It could be the gym for an hour and a half. But I make sure that habit, even if I'm really in the middle of a bunch of deadlines, Denise, and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't leave the desk. I got to get this done. I'm like, nope, here's the deal. That is a major priority. And I made a commitment. 5-6 years ago, I said, Tony, here's the deal. Your health is not only your wealth, but it is part of your job requirement. And when I followed, I'm like, that shift in thinking that's a job requirement, here's why. You have to be healthy. You're always traveling around. You're meeting strangers constantly. You're in airplanes and cabs and hotel rooms. You have to look good on stage. You have to feel good. You have to be the part. And if you're a 50-pound overweight motivational speaker, that's incongruent. That's not fair to your audience. So I made health and fitness a huge habit. It's tricky because I can't get to a gym every day. Next week, I could fall off the wagon, Denise. My workout habits, I'm going to be in three or four different hotels, traveling most of those days, flying around, going to a wedding. But I'll be like, okay, I got my headset, go walk 4 miles. Go. Get out of the hotel room and walk. Take a phone with you, put in your headset, and go walk. But that habit, even when I'm tired, I'm sore. I'm not a young man anymore, but I feel better. And those habits make you feel more confident because you have consistency in a crazy world. That makes sense?
It does. And I had kind of the same issue, you know, because working from home, you know, I don't go out in public a whole lot. I mean, Walmart knows me well, but that's pretty much it. I really am an introvert, and I'm a happy introvert, but that doesn't mean I want to be unhealthy. So I brought, you know, when I separated from my husband, divorced from my husband, it was that two-car garage now became one-car garage and half of it's a gym. And
mm-hmm.
I'm out there every day, and, you know, Saturday and Sunday. I may just be, you know, Saturday and Sunday, I may just be on my little rebounder, which I love. If you don't have one of those, seriously, get one. You know, the little mini trampoline, they're phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm out there sometimes multiple times a day. If I, you know, couldn't get a full work in the first thing in the morning, I may just do 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. Instead of chasing squirrels, I may go get on, you know, my treadmill. So, yeah, it's a very important thing. Even if you're not going out in public all the time, you've got to take care of yourself because you are your business. Your health is your business.
Right. Yep, and for many years I didn't take care of my health. So.
Oh, why is that? I mean, it just weren't paying attention or didn't think it was important?
I think I didn't treat it as a priority. And, you know,
you don't when you're young,
frankly,
do you?
Now you think, I'm okay. And plus, I had a bunch of little kids. My priorities were much different. And I thought, when I get down there, I try to get down there a couple times a week, or I'm too tired watching the kids at night, or, you know, it's trying to be a good dad, and just the priorities shifted. I'm like, wait a minute, I can't be a good dad if I'm 50 pounds out of or overweight. I was at one point about 25 pounds overweight. I'm like, I need to lose some weight.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, your priorities do change. You know, we are actually at the end of the show. This was the fastest hour. And honestly, I do this to people that I really, really like. I'm going to ask you on the show so you can't tell me no to come back. So if you tell me no, I'm telling Brad on you. Just so you know.
No, I would love to, and I knew that you know, great minds attract to each other, and I heard such good things. I'm like, this is going to go really fast. Let's have fun, and you know, I'd be honored to come back. And there's lots more to share, and you've got a good audience. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, I just turned on. I put my foot on my shredder. I mean, I'm going through the book, and there are a lot of points in here that I really, really want to cover in our next talk because I think it's important for our audience. You know how you know some of the things that these people and you and me do that, you know, just gets us moving forward all the time, no matter if we're having, you know, multiple crises in our life, no matter if we're listening to the horrible news. You know, there's just so many things that distract us during the day. And this book, I think, really shows you how to kind of cut through the noise and focus
mm-hmm.
on what's important. And I really want to go over some of those key points.
Yep, I would be honored. And let's do it. So, hey, thank you for reaching out, Denise. It's been a lot of fun. I hope your audience got some value, and we'll come back again.
Definitely. Well, listen, before you go, tell people where they can find you and where they can find the book.
Thank you. They can find me simply at mindcapturegroup.com. And the new book is available at mindcapturebook.com. I will give a quick plug out that Facebook, I get a lot of people that follow me, so I'm always doing updates, blogs, e-letters of value. Look up my name under either Mind Capture. You can become a fan there, Mind Capture, and just like it. And you'll see my full name, which is a lot of people, Tony Rubleski. So go Mind Capture page first. You'll see how to spell my name. But T. Rubleski is my Facebook personal page, and here's why. More people see my personal page than my actual fan page. So a lot of people cross traffic. They start with Mind Capture. They jump over to my personal page. And we've got room for about another, I don't know, a couple thousand people, then we're going to be at 5,000. So keep getting the word out there, and appreciate it.
Definitely. Well, listen, Tony, thank you so much for being with me here today. I have had a ball, and it's been wonderful chatting with you, and I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did. And I'm pretty sure that I saw some light bulbs going off out there. It wasn't just me. So everybody, seriously. So the show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Tony Rubleski. It's Rubleski. And I will see you next week. Tony, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.